Fred, are you okay? What have they done to you?
They helped me to see.
Oh, God, they wired you up, didn't they? Tried to brainwash you. Come on, we'll get you some food. You'll feel better. Whatever they did, I'll wipe it clean. They're not gonna take you away from me.
Welcome to Series 4, Episode 34 of Conversational Nigger Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 34, the screenplay was done by James Wiley. It was directed by Ian Moon. And the episode synopsis will be read out by Tamsin.
Pride and Siva struggle to adjust to their new realities, while the Technos roll out registration for the next phase of their grand plan.
Had a real strong desire to go back, guys. I almost quit on you today. just listening to the opening sting, the dream of Stay Alive, and the original score. So we open up on the mall, and for a second, I imagined, what if this was an earlier season, you know? And then the reality.
Yeah, but you can't think like this. You're torturing yourself. You just can't. You've just, this is the reality that we live in now. You can't go back.
There's nothing good here. There's nothing good in this reality. I don't want to be here anymore.
You're sounding like Pride. You don't want to be in this reality. You just want to go back into reality space.
I know where my spiritual wholeness is. It's back in season one, okay?
Honestly, yeah. Even the low points of season one. And there were a couple. Nothing. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine if we had season one characterization on some of these characters? Oh my god.
If only.
No, I felt it, Liz. I felt it.
We have heavy lifted this show for a long time, haven't we, as a fandom?
25 years and counting.
Why? Why?
It's been 84 years.
Still smell the fresh paint.
It feels like that at the moment, though, doesn't it? It feels like 84 years since we last had a good storyline or connected with any of these characters. That's how long it's been.
Yep.
Because it's not just, I mean, in my opinion, I know I've said this a lot, it's not just season four, it's the end of season three as well. It's been a slog.
Yep.
And I think the only difference between the end of season three and season four is that there was more characters that we cared about, that we had this connection to in season three.
At least season three still had people like Alice.
Yeah.
Even though they ruined her, we still held out hope that she would return.
Before we start this massacre, which this is going to clearly be, I want to start on a positive note for fans of season four. If you like these characters, if you are invested in this storyline, I promise this is probably a pretty exciting episode with a really awesome cliffhanger for those people. Of course, the caveat is you have to like these people and be invested in this storyline to feel any of that. So if you did, congratulations. I'm so happy for you. I'm glad that you probably enjoyed this episode. Okay. Bloodbath may begin.
It was fine. In fact, it's one of the most extraordinary experiences I've ever had.
See?
Told you. It's not all negative.
In fact, it was hugely uplifting. Oh, the words to describe it. But words are inadequate. It's beyond language.
Ha. Pride's hooked.
No, he's not. They've confused him. It won't last. He'll recover his senses.
I've lost nothing, Celine. That spiritual wholeness I've searched for all my life. I finally found it.
So, yeah. What did you make of the whole extent of Pride's reality-based sickness and how excessive the addiction is presented in both this and the corresponding scenes?
It writes a check that its butt can't cash. This is the kind of foreshadowing that they don't really follow through on. This Pride's extreme reaction to what he experienced really lays the groundwork for an incredibly dangerous program that's about to happen to all these kids. Okay. And I don't feel that the corresponding storyline that follows delivers on that promise. It's to hook you into being like, oh my gosh, what is going to happen in the same episode where Pride comes out of this completely fried and out of his mind and a completely different person than he's been presented as in this season. And then they tell you that, oh, they're going to scan all the city kids to get them involved in this game. It's setting the stage for like, oh, something horrific is going to happen to all of these kids. And I just don't think they'll deliver on that promise.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we had a bit of foreshadowing before Pride went into the game with how Chloe was showing signs of clear addiction and her thinking about it all the time and wanting her access to it. But it feels so contrived, doesn't it? Like now suddenly he's addicted to the game. And I just wonder if it would have been more interesting if he had come back and appeared to be like himself, but secretly he is completely addicted. And we don't find that out until he's on the roof.
I would have appreciated seeing Pride. Like, I like your idea. He seems himself, comes out like, oh, you know, I hated it. It wasn't real. I didn't like that false reality, you know, and spoke negatively about the experience. And Celine would be like, what? You're okay. And he's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm good. And, you know, I don't even know why Ram chose that for me. It was just, he thought he could win me over, blah, blah, blah. But then you just see him struggling with it because he can't stop thinking about it and he keeps telling himself it wasn't real. It was stupid. It was stop thinking. He can't stop thinking about it. And then by the end of the episode, he finds himself on this roof. I think that would have been much more compelling and tension filled, and more in keeping with who Pride is, you know, who they've written him to be, more interesting. And again, it would have felt less contrived and less forced, to deny that he wants to be there again, to tell himself immediately, no. I mean, it didn't work on me, buddy. I know I wasn't flying. I know I wasn't experiencing that for real, and act like he's disgusted by it. And yet he starts dreaming about it and he's, you know, finds himself zoning out and he's the whole time he's in his brain telling himself, stop it. Stop thinking about it. It wasn't real. Stop. You know, don't fall for this artificial crap. And he succumbs anyway, you know what I mean? And it would be great to see Pride fight this more. And I think that might actually be a more realistic depiction of the addiction they're trying to go for.
Mm. Yeah.
Right.
It absolutely would have been. It's just, for me, the state Pride is in, especially when Ved drops him off, I can't help it. It reminds me of how the Guardian would be at times when he felt like he had a vision of Zoot.
Yeah.
It's like he's in that same sort of state, the stupid smile, and then that just that whole, oh no, but I've seen this and this was amazing. Like for some reason it always reminds me of that. But then again, that might be me wishful thinking that they tested something similar on the Guardian at some point and actually made him see Zoot. But I don't know. It's just, for Pride, it's such a complete flip of who he used to be. It's too much.
Right.
It's so far over the top like this.
The missing puzzle piece of this, really, is, has Pride ever been exposed to any sort of technology, any sort of games, you know, computer games prior to the end of civilization as they knew it. Like, but we don't know if his family lived off-grid, if he's always lived in this world where they didn't have this sort of technology. So I would imagine that if that was the case, then this would absolutely blow your mind completely. But because we don't know anything really about him, and he is just like a walking motivational poster, really, isn't he? Like, none of it really fits together. Because you do wonder, I mean, I pick up with what you said, Sabine. He is acting like he has had some transformative experience, but also he's acting like he's on drugs, like he's completely off his face. And it does make you wonder, like, did they give him some sort of hallucinogen to make it more powerful? But then again, we never saw any of this stuff.
Nope.
So again, we're just filling in the missing bits ourselves.
I also think it would have helped with the tension if you, you know, if again, Pride comes back and it alleviates the tension by having him act as though he's fine, you know, when really he's just in denial and disgusted that part of him enjoyed the experience he had just had. And so he's trying to shove it down. And then as the episode goes on, you just keep getting these little hints that something's not right, that he's been affected by the experience. So your worry is growing with Celine's, you know, and then the tension is finally peaks when he goes up on that roof. You might actually be really worried about him, but there is no tension when it comes to Pride because you know right away that they got him. It's like with when Trudy came back from The Chosen, they very smartly took their time revealing the fact that they got her.
Mm-hmm.
She comes back. I got away. I'm just, you know, I'm traumatized, but I'm okay. And me and the baby are back and I'm home. And then there's just these little hints that something's not right with Trudy until finally she's in the barn, you know, after snapping at Chloe and she's hugging Patsy and she's off in her head and she's thinking of the Guardian and Zoot. And that's when you know, oh my gosh, they got her. You know what I mean? I knew something was wrong with her. I knew something was, and it's like they could have. That kind of buildup makes you, it pulls you in until they finally like punch you in the gut with the reveal. Ah, oh, Pride's not okay. They got him, you know?
And you could easily have had that scene where he's eating the food that Celine's made and he makes that comment about having traveled so many miles. And you could easily have had it, it's just a slip. And they go, what do you mean? And he went, oh, nothing, nothing. But that his mind is still there. He's some part of him still believes that this is real, that this has happened.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they sped run it. I just really do not understand why all in one episode they rushed. Like from the moment he was just dropped into that super sterile mall set, it was just sped run. Like, right from that excessive addiction. Like he was acting like he's been like 3 years on his substance. Like, come on.
It's
over the top.
Can I make a suggestion?
A blunt hammer. Yeah.
And I don't think they actually knew what to do with Bride. Once his Debbie Downer about the technos had gone on for such a long time, but they weren't doing anything else with his character. So I wonder if they looked at this and they said, let's make him an addict. That will be something we can do with
him. That's not the problem, though. You could make him an addict, but you have to show the steps and the stages to get him to that state. You can't just rush it.
I don't think they were that invested.
No, they've been speedrunning everything. They don't let tension linger. They don't let things build up. They have sped run everything since the season has started.
Yeah, that's true.
Every emotional journey the character should be on, they aren't taking a journey to get there. They're just there. They plateau immediately, and then we're just stuck on the plateau with them. And we didn't take a journey, so we're don't really care about the plateau all that much.
I think we as an audience, we're very forgiving of a character's journey. If you can do anything to a character, as long as you show us the steps of how they got there and how it's affecting them and how it's affecting the people around them, then we'll go with you along that journey. When you don't do that, we're just left with this. It's like, what's happened?
it's like we missed a couple of episodes with things with Pride.
A couple, yeah.
I mean, even Chloe, who actually hadn't grown up with that, with, you know, video games and stuff, is responding less intense as Pride is.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'll give Celine kudos, though. You know, she's, the actress is doing a really good job of showing the sort of despair you'd have seeing someone you care about completely off their gourd, knowing this is not them, knowing something's very wrong with them, and being scared, trying to get them back. And the way she's like saying, come back to me, I'm not going to lose you two, you know, things like that. I felt for her, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was very well performed. And I'd say also that they kind of gave up. They kind of gave up on him quite quickly. I know that she was, like you say, saying, you know, come back to me. But, I mean, Dee called him a zombie and she'd only been standing there for about 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. But if he's already a zombie, what state do they refer to Amber as?
Mm. Yeah, like, and they've kind of seen this, haven't they? Because, you know, Amber was not in a similar state. She was more far gone than him. But
yeah,
they have seen someone cycle out of this.
Yeah, they did it better with Amber because she still had moments of lucidity. You could see she was just battling the trauma of having to constantly remind herself, "I'm not still there," you know. And she would slip. You know, dreams bled into reality. But she had full awareness that she was no longer hooked up in that room, but she had to fight it and, you know, until she got better. And I thought it was handled better with Amber.
Yeah, there is a difference though. I mean, for Amber, it was a traumatic experience. For Pride, it was a joyous one. Like, not the moment he got hooked up, but the experience within reality space for him was enjoyable to him, whereas Amber was constantly afraid.
I mean, that picks up on another interesting point, because although we've seen Ram engage in reality space in a sort of very sensual way and an enjoyable way, we've had more instances, I would say, of reality space being used as a torture. So we had that whole thing with Lex. We also saw when Java and Ved made that mistake, Ram hooked them up and made them fly around those mountains. And they obviously were having a terrible experience. And it's interesting that this is, apart from Chloe, one of the rare instances where somebody's actually enjoyed it that we've seen so far.
Yeah, for Pride, the main goal was most likely to get him to change his mind.
Yeah.
You know, to get him to this state where he would actually want it.
Mm.
For Chloe, Ved wanted her to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Whereas in the other occasions, it was meant to be torture.
I just want to also say Ved is such a monster in this episode when he's dealing with Pride. And Dan does such a great job. Because there's no redeemable features in that child at all, in that boy. He is a monster. And it's amazing. He's just like this horrible, sinister sadist, you know?
I've actually grown to appreciate him so much more during this rewatch.
It's a shame that there's not any consistency in this through line. I mean, Ved is, on one hand, seems aware that there are side effects to this, but also exposed Chloe, the one person he seems to care about, to it. I'm done. I don't have anything else to say about this. It is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, that opens up so many of our questions, like, why are the technos generally not affected? Like, are they purposely in a dial-up on the virtue using it? Like, none of these questions are answered, and it's just left empty.
I think the only thing that makes sense in that for me is that Ved specifically warned Chloe not to stay in it too long. So apparently the technos have limits on how long you can spend inside of it without being affected. Chloe ignored that. So we see her being, you know, slightly addicted, not to the level Pride is, but, you know, she wants to go back in. Whereas with Pride, they've left him in that for quite a lot longer.
But that's the thing. He was immediately ecstatic from, like, the first 2 minutes. He was, that's what I'm saying. If they'd shown that he'd been
Yeah.
They'd increase the pleasure receptors in his brain, like, or something to show why he's being pumped this way. But they didn't show any of that. So it's just inconsistent across the board.
You mentioned Lex didn't have any side effects.
Oh, yeah.
It was literally his career.
Yeah.
And while he fell in love with the popularity, he, you know, being the people's champion, but he was never jonesing to get back in there.
No. Yeah.
He was never, he like, once he got fired, we don't once see him being like, man, I really just want the headset back on. You know, I want to be a hero again. Or, there's not a single side effect that he experiences from being in there repeatedly and winning fights and getting the hormonal rush from it all.
He had breaks in between.
It doesn't matter. He was in there constantly, repeatedly, having a good experience because he was winning, enjoying it. It doesn't, it's like, you've got to be consistent about what people are experiencing there. You can't just say if they had a bad experience, they don't want to go back and they have no side effects, because we've already seen that's not true. Amber had a terrible experience and she had a lot of side effects from being in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can I just suggest something? I think maybe both of you have got, well, I think both of you have got great points. And I wonder if they specifically changed it so that it is more addictive, because this becomes a pay-for-play system, isn't it? So they want people to be addicted to the game so that they go and work in the foundries and et cetera, et cetera. They work in the factory, you know, so maybe they have tweaked it slightly. So whatever they were using is not addictive, and what they were using with Lex was not addictive, but they've tweaked it.
Mm.
So it now becomes addictive, and it's that pay for play.
Yeah, I can definitely see people like Ram and Fed doing something like that.
Yeah, so they'll continue to use the safe model. They'll continue to use that. Everybody else is on this addictive thing.
That's the headcanon. Because that's not in the show.
No. But then none of this is it really? So, yeah.
Yeah, it goes with their plan. They wanted a docile city. So yeah, we'll go with that. It's just, I really wish this was in the show.
Yeah, because it would have been really interesting.
Oh man, we've got those whole red and blue fights coming up, and it just makes me...
Yeah.
I just groan. Just groan. Yeah, speaking of groaning, meanwhile, Jay confronts Ebony about the reality of her feelings for Ram.
What are you talking about?
Nothing. It doesn't matter. Think what you want to think. Maybe I'm in love with Ram. Maybe I'm not. You're no longer in the equation.
But I...
Enough!
Later, she uses Siva's absence to insert herself into Ram's life and divert his attention from a displeased Fed, but privately finds what she's doing distasteful. Yeah, what'd you make of Ebony's situation here?
She did it to herself.
I can't feel bad for her.
Nope.
No. No, and I, you can wring no sympathy from this. I'd also say Jay has to be an absolute moron not to have put it together. It's right there. So Ram's obviously shown her something.
Double sorry. You
know, they dial people's intelligence down to such a level that you wonder how they survive this far, you know?
I'm just like, when has Ebony not been direct? Like,
yeah,
come off it. This constant playing around the bush, like, just tell him. Like, this is ridiculous now. Just tell him.
I mean, Ebony, you have this guy constantly running back into your room, begging for justification. Again, I have no sympathy for Jay either, but I'm just saying, like, you've got a guy who you think has betrayed you emotionally. And that his, you know, his secretive thoughts aren't with you. And you're quite upset about that. You're not demanding an explanation. You want to get back at him. Fine. Whatever. Do what you got to do. But the fact that he keeps running back to you, begging you to be like, why are you doing this to us? Why did you leave me? Why did you choose him? Even after your marriage, he's barging into your room being, you just can't be real. None of that makes you like, one, none of that gives you satisfaction. Okay. The guy's chasing after you. No guys ever chase after you, Ebony. None of them. None of them. Even when you were dating Zoot, he was primed to replace you with his baby mama. And he was, that was the plan the whole time, was to get his girl back, you know? And Bray never chased you anywhere, all right? You chased him all over this island, all right? And here's this one guy that you really want, and he is chasing you down. Please, what did I do? Why are you doing this to us? Even if I don't believe his heartbreak is real, I'm smarter than you, Ebony, so you should fall for this. And never once, you get so close to just telling him, I know what you did. I know what you really think. And you keep stopping yourself. You can't convince me that you don't desperately want an explanation from him. Mm. I don't believe you. Okay? The script just refuses to let you accuse him and call him out, so that we can stay in this annoying limbo between the two of you. And I don't feel bad for either of them. No. I'm just irritated.
And it feels so generic. Nothing is actually about either of their characters. Neither of their characters really act like this.
And again, when it all comes down to the thing that he's supposed to have done, it makes it more lame.
Yeah.
Because she shouldn't have believed it in the first place.
I mean, it's actually embarrassing. If she admits this to him, she's going to look like a right Nana, you know? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine admitting this to somebody? Oh, by the way, I saw, you know, generative AI, and it made me think you were cheating on me. Wild, wild.
Yeah, especially for Ebony, you know, of all people.
Right.
I mean, what she did to Amber, come on. She knows how easy it
is. She's seen it firsthand, hasn't she? She was in the control room when Ram puppeted Amber.
Yep.
She saw that happen. She saw what Amber really said, and she saw what Ram made her say. Now, look, we all know that Ebony is pathologically obsessed with Amber, and any man she ever has any relationship with, if he looks at her, she starts to get, you know, dagger eyes. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference. She's not stupid. This is the action of a really stupid person.
I mean, we've seen her do dumb things before, you know. I remember her still carrying that picture around even after, like, she and Bray was onto her, and she's still holding this thing out in view of anybody who could see it. Why? What are you doing? What are you doing? So we know she's capable of being the biggest idiot on the planet when the script needs her to be, so the plot can happen. But, oh, it's tiresome.
But that was her dream photo.
Oh, stop. I'm like, just keep it in your underwear. And the minute Bray comes to you and says, this is what Amber told me you did, that's when you're like, oh, I can't ever let anyone see this picture. But that's when she takes it out and is kissing it. Like, what are you doing? In the middle of the day, too. In the middle of the camp, where anyone could see her. So we know she's capable of being dumb when the script wants her to be.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just as tiresome as that storyline, as far mm-hmm. as I'm concerned.
Yep.
Because it required two very smart characters to be massive dumb. Like, just, I'm not going to say it, but you know what I'm saying? Like, this, all the intelligence had to ooze out their ears for the storyline to happen. Again, I can forgive both characters for, you know, in a moment believing it, but the minute they started thinking about it and having questions and demanding an explanation. Mm-hmm. But no, both storylines require them to be adamant they don't want to hear the other person's side of the story. And I would understand that if, like Siva, she had walked in on him with Amber. There is no other side of the story. Like, at that point, it's very clear. Their side of the story is written on the bed in front of you. I understand in that situation why you're like, I don't want to hear what you have to say. But in both of Amber and Ebony's situation, it's like, you don't want to hear their explanation at all, because you don't... Why are you doing this to yourself, Elizabeth? It's not good enough to care about, so just stop. Stop.
Fine. There's no food.
This is a farm. You know, where people grow things, vegetables.
You can't be serious.
Relax. You'll survive. And when I get back, all our problems will be gone. There'll be no more hiding.
Having left her there, Lex heads back to sea to try and make a deal for her safety, asking Ebony to get Ram to drop the search. Liking the idea of having less competition, Ebony convinces Ram to strip Siva of all of her techno rights before telling Lex that he owes her. So yeah, what did you make of Siva and Lex's situation in this episode?
Okay, so I personally absolutely hate the way Lex and Siva's relationship is playing out. And I don't know if this is just me. Let me know if you guys feel the same. But Siva just feels like an inconvenience to Lex, that he has to kind of stash her somewhere and that he's already having second thoughts about her. I definitely felt that in the second conversation that he had with Ebony when he was lying on the bed. And I got the vibe that he was already thinking, oh, I should have just not done this at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't anything in their relationship that I would say is positive, apart from Siva's not a techno anymore, but she's still relying on Lex to look after her and cater to her. Now, admittedly, she's going to go on this journey. And so part of that is, this is her default. This is where she currently is. But he literally he dumps her in a barn and literally tells her to go and dig for vegetables, of which there aren't going to be any because they haven't planted a crop there probably in years, to get her dinner. And it's like, at no point would he have treated, like, even Zandra, who he treated abominably, he never would have treated like this when he was really interested in her and it was serious. And it's like, poor Siva.
Yeah, it is. It does come off. It's like, I don't, but I mean, that's what they say when the side piece, you know, is no longer just fun and convenient. When there's a responsibility to the side piece, that's when things start to fall apart. So I actually appreciate the realism of that, that you can already see that now that Siva's actually his responsibility and he realizes how much care, like how she doesn't have any independence. She has no idea how to take care of herself in the slightest, which is eye-opening and at least consistent with her character. We realize, well, no wonder she's with the technos and puts up with all of this abuse from everybody, because she really doesn't have any common sense on how to take care of herself in the slightest. You know, but at the same time, you're like, you didn't even bring her like dinner. Like, you know, the farm hasn't been occupied since season 3, since the Chosen took over and trashed the place. You know that it, and you just left her here with no food, no supplies, not even a blanket, nothing. I can understand that she's someone you have to stash away. I get that. He can't, you know, his reasonings all made sense. He can't take her back to the mall. Not a great, not a good look. He still doesn't want to admit to anybody that he's moved on. You know, I think Dee's the only one who knows. So I get all that. But you left her to barn with not even a lamp? Like, what are you doing?
I'm just sitting there thinking, why on earth is she in the barn? There was a house attached to that. We've seen there the was. Inside of that house when Ellie was ill.
Yeah. Ellie was staying there at the end of season 3. You know, when Jack came to see her, she was inside the house, sleeping in her old bed. Like, it was still habitable, but he's got her in a barn. You know, I mean, granted, that's because they don't have the old set and all that stuff. But it was just like, what the? Come on. And it's a farm. Just go out and find yourself some food. Are you kidding me?
And at least just go inside to try and find anything.
And I mean, this is somebody who obviously has never really had to look after themselves in that way. Like, everything that she has told him about herself, she's never going to be able to look after herself, get food for herself. He didn't even pack supplies for her. That's he literally just dumped her there. It's like, oh my God. And you picked up on the side chick thing. This is the most side chick she could have been treated.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can for sure bet that when he was saying to Tyson, run away with me, When he said to Zandra, let's start a life somewhere else, he had supplies.
Yeah.
There was somewhere he thought about taking them. The rebel base. Some other place he had found to take Zandra. You know, he wasn't just going to go, and now we dig for vegetables.
And not even we dig for vegetables. And you dig for vegetables. I'm going back home to the mall. Where there's food waiting for me.
Because, you know, he, with Zandra, yeah, he might have said, we're digging for vegetables. And he might have said, hey, you're a woman. You prepare it for me. But at least he would have made sure she had stuff to do that with.
And it'd be different if they'd been caught out on the run. But they were in their his little hideout that he already made for them, which is already stocked with some supplies.
That's just right,
yeah. Just those with you. The blankets and everything. Just built, put a pack together, because you should know there's nothing at this farm. And just in case there's nothing at the farm. No one's been out there. Nobody's been maintaining it. So you just pack a pack of the supplies you already have in the hideout, if it's not safe to keep her there, and bring that to the farm with you, so she has it for the night. No, he dumped her with nothing, and it was like, are you friggin' serious?
My brain is just going, Lex, this is not your wife. Yeah, your wife could find wild vegetables and roots to dig up and recognize plants on what's edible and what's poison. This little princess, however, can't.
No, and I mean, I think we've touched on Zandra a bit, haven't we? And the thing is, there came a point in their relationship when they were more stable, that if Lex had actually asked her to do that, Zandra would have said, absolutely no, not in a month of Sundays, you can do it yourself.
But even when he was at his worst with Zandra, he made sure she was in a place where she would get food.
Yeah.
That she had shelter.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That she was safe. Even when he was treating her with absolute disdain, telling her she looked like crap, shut up, I got you someplace safe, we're in this mall. He made sure she ate. He literally even said things like that. I've taken care of you, haven't I? And this is when he was getting nothing from her. And he was just holding out.
Mm.
So, yeah, that was a younger Lex, a worse Lex, you know, a very undeveloped Lex, who was still capable of understanding, if I'm going to keep this girl on my side, I got to keep her belly full. I got to make sure she has food and protection, you know, or something. And no, with Stevie's just like, yeah, you'll be fine here in the barn. You know?
It just doesn't...
I'll see you in the morning.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like he sees Siva as someone he wants to be with anymore. It's more like...
He doesn't.
Okay, it sees a case, if you break it, you buy it, I guess.
Yeah, he doesn't.
I'm kicked out because of me, so yeah, now I'm stuck with it.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, until Ebony goes and sweet talks Ram, they're still looking for Siva. And if the trail comes to him, what will that mean? And I think part of that is the fact that he needs to nullify that and make sure he's not implicated in her going missing while Ram's still interested.
And this would be all great if we saw him actually struggling with any of that.
Yeah.
You know, again, we all agree that this would work better if he had only been using Siva to get back, to get to his wife, blah, blah, blah. Even with all that, you could still fix this by showing that Lex is, you know, that struggling with, this isn't the responsibility he wanted to take on, but he can't leave this girl to die or be punished because he feels responsible for her somehow, you know, and just dealing with that. You could have him like wrestling with a disdain for her helplessness, you know, like, what are you bringing to the table? I mean, you're hot, but what else is there, you know, or whatever, comparing her to his former wives, a former woman he's been, like, give him something to be in conflict over. But there's nothing going on with Lex. He's just this empty headed vessel who goes where the plot points him to. And it ends up being comical. Maybe it's supposed to be. But I'm not concerned for their safety. Stupid. She didn't even think to pack anything. She's like, I'm leaving the Technos with nothing. Nothing but the clothes on my back. You didn't take any of your stuff.
And my boyfriend's going to take care of me.
Like, you don't have any essentials you can't live without?
Like, even Gel was better at packing.
She was. Gel was prepared to fix her hair and makeup at any time.
She had a plan to get food. That's more than we can say for Siva.
Yeah.
Siva didn't even bring a change of clothes.
Yeah, but I mean...
any, like, toiletries. Nothing!
In Siva's defense, she's kind of always had somebody else to look out for, hasn't she? Java, yeah. Ram, Ebony to some extent when they were with Zoot. Maybe she just doesn't think about things like that. I mean, playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, but you really have to give her the intellect of a snail to her to mm-hmm. pack nothing.
Well, yeah.
To literally pack absolutely nothing. Charlie and Mouse were more capable. You know, I just can't get over how little practical thought she has. She's going to run away. And it would work if everything she brought was pretty useless in a practical term for, like, survival, but it was important to her. Like, I need my nail polish. I need my makeup. I need my soap. Yeah. You know what I mean? I need something comfortable. And it's like, none of this is practical. Like, when Zandra was packing, they were leaving the mall. She didn't pack anything practical for the trip. She packed her clothes. You know, and the others were like, Zandra, you can't bring all those. But even in her selfish state, she was still just thinking, these are the things I need. I won't survive with this stuff, but I need these things. And that's what gets me about Siva. She's not even thinking along those lines. And I'm like, how old are you? You have developed zero skills, not even the selfish ones.
She's packing worse than Patsy did when she ran away. Because at least
she packed nothing. That's the thing. She packed nothing.
Yeah.
If you tell a 5-year-old to pack their lunch, it's not going to be a practical lunch. But they're going to pack food. It's not going to be nutritious. It's not going to help them. But they're still going to pack food. They're going to be like cookies, potato sticks, you know what I mean? Or something. And you'd be like, oh, sweetie, here, that's why you pack your 5-year-old's food. Because you can't let them pack for themselves. But even a 5-year-old will pack for themselves. A 5-year-old would have grabbed some tea bars because it's candy bars, you know what I mean? They would have forgotten water, but they would remember those tea bars. Not Siva. She didn't pack anything.
She acts like she's used to being waited on constantly, which she was, apparently.
But I still just don't buy that she wouldn't take anything with her. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter that she's used to having everything provided for her. There are selfish things that she would take that wouldn't help her survive, but that she thinks are important to her. She would take those with her, and she doesn't. That's why none of this is believable to me.
I am going to say, I did like the scene between Lex and Ebony. It felt really natural, and it reminded you that they have great chemistry in a scene. And I liked how he went in and asked her for a favor, and I think she wasn't sure if she could get it. She covered it. And then when she comes back into the room, they've role reversed. So he's the one sat on the bed and he's doing his nails. And that is so Lex as well. He's like preening himself. And I just felt like these are two characters that know each other really well. And that came across. But that's literally because the actors have been working together now for years. I also like the seed that Ebony planted in his head about the fact that now he'll have to provide everything for Siva. Yeah. And look at what she's come from. And can you provide that?
Yeah, I like how she leaves him with that doubt. She's like, you break her, you bought her.
Yeah.
Good luck with that, you know? I also like that line about, you know, you'll owe me when you're important enough to be able to give me something I need or want. Mm.
Which is very Ebony.
Yeah, I did like that scene between the two. And just to finish off, what do you think of Ram stripping Siva of her techno status?
I think it happened very quickly, didn't it, considering he wanted to collect the set. And I thought the whole...
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, great mind. It just feels like his goal was to have all of them. And he hasn't had all of them for about a minute before. Yeah. And I also think, I think the missing scene was to have Java around at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish there had been more impetus for why he's so quick to cast Siva off, especially since, again, she was his favorite.
Yeah.
I just think it, you know, we've all speculated that that's why they were a throuple, because he wouldn't take Java just on her own. He wanted her sister as well, even though, because it's not because Siva wanted him. It was stated very clear to us, Siva didn't want him. She's scared of him and all that jazz. So it was clear because he had wanted her and that she'd been sort of coerced into this relationship. Mm-hmm. So what made him just suddenly be like, oh, I don't want her anymore. She's no use to me. You know, and it's mm-hmm. like, we needed a little bit more to see how his head got there. Because Ebony being able to give him back rubs, I don't think is enough for him to be like, oh, that need's been met. You know what I mean? Because it's established he wanted the collection, and all of a sudden he doesn't want the collection anymore. And it's like, but why?
Yeah, because no collector in their right mind says, oh, I've got the set, but I'm going to now give one away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That part of the set has to lose value for that to happen.
Yeah, but
so when did she lose her value?
Yeah, and even the argument that she's been out in the street with the Verts too long.
Yeah, but they see the Verts every single day. Ebony is a Vert.
Exactly. So why on earth would that work?
Nah, it's just once again fast tracking the plot.
Yeah,
the plot needs to get him to not want Siva, so that Siva can be free to go off and be with Lex for the next storyline of her driving him crazy. And him regretting everything. And, you know, that's great for him. But it's just fast-tracking getting there. Because now the plot doesn't need Siva in the techno picture anymore. So, boom, she's done. She's gone. All of a sudden, Ram doesn't care about his collection anymore. Doesn't care about his favorite wife. She's lost all value. We don't know how she lost all value. It's just the narrative saying, see, Ebony's just that good. She's just that great. And it's like, I would have liked to see her actually have to work for that. You know what I mean? To show Ebony's skills at ousting her sisters. Mm. Even a sister that wants to be gone, Ram not wanting to let her go, and Ebony having to use her tricks and trades to get her out of there. You know? But no, it's like, we're not doing that. We're already at the plateau. Siva's gone. She's out. She's not even in danger anymore. Goodbye. Boom. Where's the tension? There is none.
And they kind of raised that idea that maybe she's been kidnapped and they're using her as a hostage. Ram says that. But, I mean,
and then
he's just talked around so easily.
How can he discard that idea so quickly?
Yeah. Unless we're just meant to say, you know, that Ebony is so intoxicating that he's thrown away wanting to be a collector.
It's not earned.
I still think we needed Java's reaction to this. We kind of needed her in the room.
Speaking of Java, Dee is concerned about having to advertise the Techno's new registration centres for the game during her CNET news slot. But Java threatens her with punishment if she doesn't. As the broadcast goes out, Sammy worries about whether being scanned would be like what Amber and the other prisoners went through. Meanwhile, at the centre itself, Ved deals roughly with a protester complaining about side effects and hustles people through as quickly as possible. So, what do you make of the techno messaging here around encouraging people to go through the registration process?
Well, it's clear that they know that there are side effects, but they don't want anybody else to know. And somebody says, my friend got scanned and they've got one hell of a headache. And so clearly the technology is not where it should be, but like so much, they're going to rush people through so that they can get onto the next phase of the plan, which is phase 4.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what happened to 3 and 2? But anyway, so all of that is basically in line with everything we've seen so far.
Phase 3 was what, or wasn't it?
Was it? Yeah, phase 3. Yeah, okay. But so far, this is just much of a much from the technos, really. And, like, they use Java, but not in the scene that they should use her in.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
She's in this throwaway scene with Dee. And it's like, okay, but that's not where I wanted to see her.
I hated the whole direction of this scene. I think the way Ved handled the situation did not calm anyone's suspicions about the use of the technology. It was played the completely wrong way. I hate it, to be honest.
I also want to say the technos have got time travel. Because if you looked behind Ram, the scene that was playing out was the scene that we see after his conversation with Ebony. You could see Ram at bed in the back in the shot, in the monitors, having a go with that guy.
Mm.
And so they have time travel. Amazing. Just beyond.
They're that good.
They're that good. They're that good.
Just another example of shoddy storytelling. I mean, it was built up that Celine wanted to have a voice for the people. Pride warned her that she would just be Ram's mouthpiece. And we get a token, like, touch on that with Dee being like, I don't really want to say this. And you're saying it, or are you in trouble? So we've already resolved that storyline. This whole channel that Celine fought for, it's done. It's just another propaganda channel for the technos. Means nothing. We're not going to delve into that. That storyline's over. You know, it's gone. There's just everything. Fast track, fast track, fast track. You have this brief scene of someone saying, don't get scanned. You know, it could be dangerous. My friend's got these side effects. We're not going to hold on that tension either. Boom. Everybody's just going to ignore this guy. He's going to be hustled out, and they're all going to be pushed into the scanning. And again, I agree with Lance. I think staging is terrible because they don't even give a chance for the crowd to have a response to hearing this. They don't give a chance to show anybody maybe deciding to leave the line and be like, oh, okay, I'm having reservations about that. I'm going to wait, see how other people respond to being scanned or anything. They don't even have a response of like maybe the crowd just ignoring this guy and being like, being gung ho and running into the scanners regardless. No, it's confusing cinema language by having the people being pushed in as if though they were resistant, but we never got to see anyone be resistant. It's just bad storytelling visually. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no tension's going to linger.
Mm-hmm.
Problem solved. Everyone's getting scanned. And whatever individuality that the technos had, because I mean, of all the tribes, antagonistic tribes, I'd say, that we've met, the technos started off as having the most personality. I will give them that. The most individuals within that tribe or within that group that we got to meet and see how they view the world and how they feel about things. But a lot of that's gone out the window because the important technos that we know, we don't really get to explore their thoughts on the technology and what the plan is for the technos. The technos plan is just kept so vague that we don't even know how many of the technos understand what the goal is.
Yeah.
And like we've got like what, six main characters that are technos, and none of them except Ram and Jay talk back and forth about the vague techno plan. Like, none of them, we don't know how any of them really feel about the plan, how much knowledge they have about the plan, the end goal about the technos, because I still don't know if they knew at this time when they were writing what the end goal was for the technos. Jay never really talks about the end goal of the technos in a firm way. It's always this really vague way of just making society better. And Ram is vague about what the end goal is. Ved is vague about what the end goal is. Java and Siva never even talk about what the end goal is or how they feel about the end goal, you know? And so it's like they lost the one thing they had that made them stand out from all of the other antagonistic tribes.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
All right. That brings us to our final thoughts of the episode.
He's been drifting in and out since he got back. Jay, I'm losing him.
He's having a severe reaction. But he's strong. Okay, he'll break the spell.
Will he? And what am I supposed to do in the meantime?
Be patient. Don't let him out of your sight. I wish I could reverse it, but the damage is done.
Have you heard about the scanning centers? They will spread this disease. It will turn into a ghost town.
Meanwhile, after a difficult night, Pride goes missing. wanting to relive his experience of flying in real life. Celine and Jay rush to the roof to intercept him. So yeah, what do you make of Jay easily being pacified with what he's wanted all along? Celine's concerns about the city, and then that cliffhanger ending with Pride.
Well, it doesn't take a lot to win Jay over, does it? Just give him the hospital and he's happy. But can I just... When they had that scene when Jay comes to the mall and he tells Celine about the hospital. Now, am I getting this wrong? But previously, Celine had demanded a hospital. But he frames it as in, I've got what I wanted, which is a hospital. He doesn't say, we got what we wanted, the hospital. It suddenly goes from being something that he wanted, that she also wanted, to being his achievement. And he doesn't say to her, okay, so those people that you suggested could come and work there. None of that. It's like they've completely forgotten that two episodes ago, she went into Ram's office and demanded a hospital and a school. I'm not surprised that they've forgotten this, because they seem to live minute by minute when it comes to writing. But, yeah.
Yeah, but we all know that Jay has basically the brain of a bubble guppy.
Yeah, but they expect that for all of us. We all remember when they had that conversation.
Yeah, we do.
And I know this was going out weekly back then, because there was no sort of in demand. But it's still wild to me, the way that they have that back and forth.
It just feels like Jay is just thinking about what Jay wants and talking about what he wants.
Yeah, but it's almost as if, but from Celine's side of things, there's no recollection that she ever wanted this either.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the continuity of Jay being useless. So very useless. I love how it was a week ago when he and Ebony walked in and said, you've got inside people, we're on your side, we're going to do this and take down Ram. And he has done one useful thing, and that was to help Patch figure out how he could patch into Ram's broadcast, you know, or interrupt it or whatever. That's the only thing he's done to help these guys. How often does Jay walk around going, I can't help. Ram doesn't listen to me. I don't know what's going on. And yet makes zero effort to find out what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no wonder, because Ram just has to say, hey, your phase is finally starting and we're going to do the things you want. And all he says is, goody, yay, we're getting the things I want. And there's no discussion about the logistics or the details of how that's going to pan out. And again, none of this makes sense because they're supposed to have done this before, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, I'm waiting for Jay to be useful. I'm waiting for Jay to prove why he was ever picked to be with the Technos in the first place. Why the rebels need him in any way. He can't give them information. He doesn't really do anything for them. He can't help when one of their friends is in trouble. Like, why do you guys keep going to Jay? Like, seriously. Well, he can't help you, and he never really has helped you.
No. And I think this is the start of him essentially whitewashing him, isn't it? Where they can say, oh, well, he didn't know any of that stuff was going on. And he wasn't in on those upper level meetings, even though he clearly is an upper level person in the Technos. I mean, if you wanted to talk about triangle of importance, it goes Ram, Java, and Che are on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he slept during most of those. He wasn't included. Nobody invited him. He didn't know. He spearheaded the invasion of a city. And yet he had no idea what was going on for most of it.
Like, what does he do all day?
Mm. He does laps of the pool, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he does.
He just walks around looking... He walks around looking constipated and confused.
Yeah.
All day. All day.
Like, I get why the Technos wanted him. They needed someone to put on a poster. But that's about it.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but it's even more than that, though, because they, you you know, they wore masks for a lot of the first couple of episodes. Nobody actually would have known what he looked like.
That's like for the use of Jay was that he could pull him out to pacify any dumb women across his path. With, oh, but look, we're not bad. We have Jay, and he's yummy.
Yeah, well, I think Ram thinks that about Jay, doesn't he?
But that's about it. Yep. But yeah, no, Jay just comes across as Ram's arm candy. That's about it.
Yes, I mean, with the arse flaps and everything. Yeah, I'd say that's definitely...
I don't get how Jay can be so easily pacified by this sudden, I'm going to give you a hospital. Like, your whole goal is to have people healthy because of what happened to you in the past. And you're just about to have a whole city addicted to reality space. You've seen what the state Pride is in. You know what the state other people are going to be in. How does that match? I just don't get how you feel no conflict about this at all. Like, none. Zero. But, like, how could you not draw the distinction between the two events? Like, how is the two going to work? You got a city of sick people and you're trying to make them healthier with the hospital. Like, how does that two match? How? Jay? How?
Well, the whole time, he's been justifying his actions, hasn't he? By saying, we're going to bring water, we're going to bring education, we're going to bring a hospital. He's been justifying the kidnap and enslavement of lots of people mm-hmm. who, although he has never met, he has met their loved ones. He has met their tribe. He intimately knows some of them. And the justification for him this entire time is that he keeps saying that mantra. We're bringing hospitals. We're bringing schools. We're going to make your lives better. But I would say that's what we need him to do. We need him to say, all of this, everything I have done, has been about this. We have had a character, you picked up on this ages mm-hmm. ago, Sophie, that was like this, which was Lieutenant Luke. He was like this. He justified everything he did with his slavish devotion to Zoot and also trying to improve people's lives. So I can't... Jay is just a less well-written version of Luke. And that's what we needed. We needed him to kind of give himself a pep talk in the mirror and be like, listen, everything has gone to hell. But, you know, you get in the hospital.
A hospital that will be fairly useful for someone like Ram, because, you know, if you're going to have slaves, someone needs to take care of them after they work.
Oh, I think he's just going to burn them out, to be fair.
Jay just doesn't make sense. Not make sense.
What does now? What makes sense in it? Does any of it? And as for Pride, jump, babe, jump. Just jump. Get it over with. End the pain for all of us.
You know, that would have been a great scene. A you jump, I jump scene for Jay and Pride. And preferably ending with them both jumping.
Yes! Yes. And I think we would all have loved it.
I'd like to know how every time we get to a jumping scene, this is the third jumping scene we've gotten, and they lose effect.
Why have they never closed off the access?
The lack of creativity that has happened in the writing, the lack of effectiveness of reused storylines. He's our third jumper. We already noticed how the tension lessened with each one. Now, this episode has exhausted me. Celine on that roof. That was an amazing scene. I was genuinely afraid for her. I felt the fear off of everybody. It was eerie. It was unsettling. It was filmed well. And it was uniquely Celine's moment of just breaking completely, you know, and the desperation of her mm-hmm. loved ones to get her off that ledge. Then they did it with Ellie. It was less effective. There was no real buildup to get there. It didn't feel unique to Ellie, how she would decide, I'm done, all that. And now Pride. And we've really reached the point where we're like, fly free, pony boy. You know what I mean? Like, and it didn't have to be that way. But it's the speed running. It's the lack of care and buildup to get us there that just... We don't. Now, again, I will reiterate what I said at the beginning. if you like these characters, if you are invested in the storyline, this was a good cliffhanger for you. Because you didn't want him to jump. You wanted them to save him. You were like, whoa, I can't believe this is where we ended up. But if you don't feel that way, this is tiresome and lazy. Bad storytelling. And the actors all deserve better. Because I will say this for Nick, he is acting his butt off. He was directed to act as though he was out of his mind. And he's doing it. But it's to service a really crappy story.
Right, that brings Series 4, Episode 34 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel. And you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for The Tribe Look at UK or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation. Just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time for episode 35. Until then, bye.
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 Good riddance.